This is the 401 Podcast. Join Rhode Island sports journalist and basketball scribe Kevin McNamara with guests from the Ocean State sports scene and beyond. Now, here's your host, Kevin McNamara.
Hello, and welcome to the 401 Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin McNamara. On this edition of the podcast, I'm pleased to welcome University of Rhode Island head basketball coach David Cox. Coach Cox is in his third season as coach of the Rams, and this season he has one of the more intriguing rosters in the entire Atlantic 10, if not the East. But more on the Rams in a bit. First, I'd like to address the one item regarding the Rams that has been the talk of the state for a few weeks now. There will be no URI Providence College basketball game this season. Yes, it's true. No Ram invasion of the Dunkin' Donuts Center. No state legislators jockeying for the best tickets. No fist fights for the best spots at the Capitol Grill Bar. No nothing. They aren't playing. Why? The pandemic is cause number one. PC is hosting the game this year, and I really don't think the Friars want to host many games at Alumni Hall. With the prospect of zero or limited fans in the stands, we really won't see that PC-URI intensity anyways. The NCAA has limited the number of games the teams can play this year. And Friar coach Ed Cooley has determined he doesn't need another tough one to pump up his schedule. I'd have to agree. The Friars are playing three games in the Maui Invitational, which is in Asheville, North Carolina, and also traveling to TCU in the Big East Big 12 battle, which probably shouldn't be happening anyways. Add in 20 Big East games, and the Friars are at 24 of a potential 27 games total. Let's just say that those other three games will not be contest the Friars have any business losing. This news didn't go over well in Kingston, and I totally understand why. Under Dan Hurley and continue with David Cox, the Rams are a team no one wants to play. By no one, I mean no one that controls their schedule. The Rams have become too consistently dangerous for their own good. So Cox is struggling to fill his schedule with quad one or quad two opponents. Providence was one game he was counting on. Now that's not going to happen. Or is it? Yes, I think there is hope. After speaking with some informed interest from both schools, I feel there is some light at the end of the tunnel. Here is a scenario that is neither far-fetched or the end of some crazy hoop fantasy. There is a pandemic raging in America. That includes Rhode Island, where our positive case and hospitalization numbers are pointing upwards. That needs to change. If it doesn't, there is an excellent chance that URI and PC will postpone or outright cancel some games in December, maybe even into January. Things get even worse. They may be putting some Big East and Atlantic 10 games on ice. Well, the NCAA is mandating that teams play a minimum of 13 contests in order to be eligible for selection into the NCAA tournament. What if it becomes January and both the Rams and Friars aren't playing many games? State health rules are denying teams from virus-infected states from coming to Little Rhodey and playing games at the Ryan Center or Alumni Hall or even the Dunk. It could happen. You know what else could happen in that scenario? The Friars and Rams end up playing each other. Maybe even home and home. I know. Calm down, Sam the Ram. Easy, Friar Dom. While you settle back into your seats, Ram fans, we have some bad news. Coach Cox doesn't want to address the PC scheduling issue in this edition of the 401 Podcast. We will honor his wishes and talk about the Rams' very odd summer, Cox's upbringing in the Washington, D.C. area, his relationship with Dan Hurley, and a few more items. Coach Cox, thanks very much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Now, we're hoping that you'll be a frequent guest throughout what promises to be a very challenging but also potentially exciting season for the Rams. And let's start with the challenge part first. You know, I really haven't talked to you all that much over the summertime because college basketball programs were just shut down. What was the summer like for the Rams?
Wow, it was filled with a lot of uncertainty. We obviously had some adversity that we had to deal with early in the pandemic. Obviously, initially, just the pandemic and the fact that the season, as you mentioned, was shut down. We had to, you know, kind of scurry out of New York City, and then I had to send the guys home, you know, so they could be with their loved ones as we kind of endured the first, you know, few weeks of this pandemic. And then as things started to settle in, about a month into the pandemic, we were able to get those guys back here to campus, which just was a much safer environment for them. considering the pandemic as well as the civil unrest. So, you know, there was a lot of adversity. But I think at the end of the day, Kevin, that at least I'm hoping that we were able to bond, you know, during this period of time. And I'm hoping that, you know, that will bode well for us moving forward into this season, particularly since we have so many new faces.
What was life like for the players once they returned to campus? They could get into the dorms. What was life like for the guys?
Well, it was very different, obviously. There were probably about 50 to 100 students here on campus total, you know, some international students who had gotten kind of stuck here and could not return home, as well as some other athletes. They did have access, obviously, to their dorms. They had access to a couple of eateries here on campus, but they were very limited in regards to access to anything outside of the dorms. They had no access to the athletic facilities, so they weren't allowed to, you know, come in here and get workouts in or go see the trainer or get a lift in or anything like that. And many of the buildings here were shut down just in general. So it was very, very different for them. And as I mentioned, you know, earlier, I just think, you know, that caused them to spend a lot of time together and form some, you know, some bonds and some relationships that hopefully, you know, benefit us during the season.
You mentioned to have them on campus during what was just a crazy summer in the world, not only with the virus, but with the social unrest. And you've been outspoken throughout the fall here that you've taken some time to sit your players down and have a productive man-to-man adult conversations. I know that's something that you've always believed in, always tried to do, but certainly emphasized through what's, been a very turbulent time in America.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, this particular age range of young men and young women, first of all, I've been very impressed with them. I think that they are truly, you know, conscious about what is going on here in this country, both from a political aspect, obviously with the virus, and then starting to kind of dig a little bit deeper into our history and kind of figure out, you know, why things are the way they are, why the civil unrest, you know, what were some of the historical facts that led to this. And so that's the first thing. I have to give them a lot of credit. But, yeah, it's very important, you know, to me as an adult, as a father, as a, you know, as a coach, as a mentor, you know, to make sure that that they're aware of these things, that they're conscious. You know, again, I'm not trying to shape anybody's thought patterns or anything like that. I just want to give them pertinent information, particularly historical facts, that will, you know, that will help guide them as they continue to grow and mature.
I like to say that anyone who has perspective was taught perspective. Can you tell the fans, you know, the Rhodey fans, college basketball fans, I think everyone knows that you're from the D.C. area. Just a little bit about your background, David, and who kind of steered you in the right direction as a high schooler and then into college at the College of William & Mary?
Born in Washington, D.C., raised in Landover, Maryland. My parents are originally from Washington, D.C. They're products of D.C. public schools. I've got two older brothers and a younger sister. Both of my parents, you know, did everything they can to protect us from, you know, some of the ills of just kind of inner city living. They stressed education. They stressed going to church and being a God-fearing individual, and they stressed the importance of work ethic. I think a lot of my experiences, similar to many African-American young men who come from, you know, inner-city areas, there was a duality to it. You know, again, I had a great home life, and I had great guidance and instruction from my parents. So, again, you know, I valued education from the beginning. I grew up in the church, and you know, I learned to work extremely hard, both on the court and off the court, for everything that I got. But I say there's a duality, because there's the flip side of it, and the flip side of it is, you know, again, I lived in an environment. I grew up in D.C. in the 80s. You know, 80s was the crack epidemic. 80s was when Washington, D.C. was the murder capital of the country. We even had a mayor, if you recall, who was caught with crack cocaine. So it was, you know, all hell was breaking loose in D.C. in the 80s and at least early to mid-90s. And, you know, so because of that, you know, I witnessed quite a bit. As I mentioned in a couple of earlier interviews, I was also an unwilling participant in some things in regards to specifically in regards to interaction with the police.
Right.
So that's the kind of duality that I've lived, and those experiences have helped shape me, make me the man that I am, and I've grown and learned from those experiences. So I try to share those experiences with our guys so that they can, just continue to grow and learn.
You said a lot there, Coach, and a couple things clicked in my head. One was just the relationship that part of the country had with inner city living, with the drug trade, and with basketball. If you grew up in Landover, I've been going down to the D.C. area for a long time, mostly to watch the Georgetown Hoyas, and the Cap Center was in Landover. So I would imagine you found your way into the Cap Center from time to time as a young man.
Absolutely, yeah. I grew up going to a rec center right down the street from the Capitol Center, Columbia Park Rec. You know, Landover is the home of Lynn Bias. You know, Jay Bias used to play in the gym a lot when I was coming up. And again, I can probably mention, you know, hundreds of, you know, basketball players from the D.C. area, shoot from the 80s, the 90s, and obviously the 2000s. But yeah, you know, D.C., you know, helped mold me, helped shape me. It gave me some thick skin, you know. But also just, again, I learned a lot about the importance of valuing education and how education can kind of, you know, help pave you a whole new path in life. And if it wasn't for the influence, you know, sometimes the strict influence of both of my parents, but if it wasn't for them and I didn't get that piece, I'm not sure where I would be today.
William & Mary is one of the great colleges, not only of that part of the country, but of the entire United States. Parent of college-age kids who have just made it through college, I certainly know how difficult it is to get into the College of William & Mary, so I'm sure you had a great experience there. And then you went on looking to coach right away, and the one thing that jumps out at me in your bio is your time spent in the AAU scene, and there's so many you're somewhat of a forerunner of that, because now there's so many head and assistant coaches with heavy, heavy AAU ties that seem to be multiplying by the year. And yours was with the D.C. Assault. I don't know if that was the only one, but can you just take us into that period of your life?
Sure, no, absolutely. So I graduated with my master's degree in the summer, basically, of 96, and then I started right away at Archbishop Carroll as the assistant dean of students. I got my feet wet there in my second year as the head coach of the freshman team. So that was my first coaching job. I'd like to give a shout out to the athletic director and former head coach at Archbishop Carroll Holmes, who gave me that opportunity. After a couple of years of working with Archbishop Carroll, I was given the opportunity to work with D.C. Assault. D.C. Assault was started by both Curtis Malone and Troy Weaver, who is the general manager of the Detroit Pistons right now. I started coaching a 16-man team as an assistant coach, and they kind of gave me the reins as the head coach of that 16-man team. And I did that for about 8 years, and what an awesome experience. I coached some super talented young men, guys who played at, you know, all levels of college basketball, obviously including the highest level of Division I, and several of them have gone on to play in the NBA.
Give us some names, Coach, if you don't mind.
Oh, sure, absolutely. I coached Michael Beasley, who was a number 2 pick with the Miami Heat. I coached Nolan Smith, who was the number 19 pick with the Portland Trail Blazers. I coached Dante Cunningham, who may still actually be in the league. Orenze Onuwaku, who started Syracuse and had a cup of coffee in the NBA. I also took great pride in coaching Navarro Bowman, who happened to be a Penn State star linebacker and then the star linebacker for the San Francisco 49ers. He was a hell of a basketball player, strong lefty. Well, those are just, you know, a few of the names. Other guys who came through that program were guys like Jeff Green and Keith Bogans, who starred at Kentucky, DeMar Jackson, Johnson, Kevin Lyde, Mark Karcher. I mean, those are some big time names, big time players. Bernard Robinson, who played at Michigan and played in the NBA for a while. You know, all those guys came to that DCSO program. And again, like I said, it was an awesome experience. We traveled and played against the best of the best in the country. I remember playing against O.J. Mayo in the national championship game in Dallas, Texas in 2000, I think it was four. I remember playing LeBron James down in Texas when he was playing with the Oakland Soldiers. I think he had Leon Poe and Kendrick Perkins on that team. We beat them, by the way. So, there's some great, great memories.
I remember first seeing DC Assault. I was out in Las Vegas on one of those crazy trips, and I think DeMar Johnson was their star. I'm not quite sure, but he was obviously a very super high-end prep player. We're not going to do the entire Dave Cox story on the 401 podcast, but I will fast forward to the Dan Hurley connection. How and why did you form a union with Dan and come to Rhode Island?
Oh, well, I was really fortunate to have gotten the opportunity by Dan. I actually did not have a relationship with Dan prior to getting the job here. As you know, prior to being here, I was at both Georgetown and Rutgers. And during my time at Rutgers, I spent personally quite a bit of time at St. Anthony's recruiting some of Bob Hurley's seniors players. And we were fortunate enough to get a player from St. Anthony's. That would be Miles Mack. And because of that relationship, in all actuality, when I was looking for a job and they had a void, there were a couple of assistant coaches who mentioned my name to Dan. And I have to believe, just based on, a little bit of relationship I had with St. Anthony's and the father, that helped get me in the door. And I came up here, I sold myself. He gave me the opportunity And again, I owe Dan a lot. Not only did he, one, give me the opportunity without necessarily really knowing me, but he trusted me and he kind of gave me my wings. Year two, three, and four were the years that he really, helped elevate me as a coach, giving me a voice, giving me a lot more responsibility, giving me, opportunities to coach, in game, with him. Make suggestions and things of that nature. So, that's kind of where the relationship started and kind of how we kind of gelled and then ended up winning a couple of championships. And obviously Dan moves on and then he again blessed me, kind of leaving the door, speaking to whoever he would, could speak to, whether it was media or administration here, indicating that he thought that I would be a great replacement. So, I'm definitely in debt to that man tremendously.
It's obviously worked out well for both sides, both the University of Rhode Island and for David Cox. Dave's about to get ready for his third season as the head coach at Rhode Island with a very, very unique and different lineup. Anyone who saw the Rams last year was impressed with both their senior leadership with Cyril Langevin and Jeff Doughton, but also some intriguing younger players. The roster is totally turned over. Mainly due to the NCAA's impending transfer rule. The Rams lost a few good players and then added quite a few on the flip side. And David, just a little bit about your returning guys before we go into the new ones. And at the top of the list is clearly Fats Russell. I think everyone remembers Fats for his breakout game against Providence as a freshman, but he's obviously elevated himself into one of the very best guards in the country. Of what you've seen so far in workouts and practice here in the fall, what will an improved senior Fats Russell look like?
Well, I think he's setting himself up for a very good year because of his approach. He's continued to get better every year, which is something usually as a talented freshman, can be somewhat of an obstacle. Once you have that early success, it sometimes can be hard for these young men to continue to focus, continue to drive, continue to push themselves. But that's not Fats at all. He lives in the gym. He's his biggest critic. So he's always looking at, attacking weaknesses and getting better. Then overall, I think people witnessed last year, his growth as a person, as a player in regards to his maturity. And that has continued to take place. And he's just in a really, really good place right now mentally. And I think that this team will go as Fats goes.
The backcourt is really fortified this year by a few transfers. One is Jalen Carey from Syracuse, and the other is, well, not a transfer. He's a junior college player who did not play last year, Jeremy Shepard. Those two guys especially, they all can handle the ball along with Fats. How do you see, do you have a pure point guard, or do you just have guards who can play?
Yeah, no, we just have guards that can play. I mean, I think any one of those guys can be a lead guard, you know, on this team at any given time because of not only the ball handling ability, but because of their decision making abilities and ability to kind of get people in the right spots and organize and make the right plays. All three of those guys have had tremendous experience at the point guard spot, so you know I'm looking forward to you know playing them together and having them you know play off of one another.
Thanks very much to Coach David Cox. It's not an easy job to follow someone like Dan Hurley. But Cox has kept the Rams where they need to be, in the upper tier of the Atlantic 10, and in the running for annual postseason berths. With a big season from Fats Russell, a nice transition from a slew of talented transfers, and a little luck, I can see the Rams challenging for the top of the A-10 once again. Thanks very much, and keep looking for the next edition of the 401 Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the 401 Podcast with Kevin McNamara. Get the 411 on the sports scene in the 401 by subscribing to the 401 Podcast from KevinMacSports.com.